Welcome to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal, where our goal is to change the way you practice dentistry by helping you achieve clinical, financial, and personal balance. Now, here's your host, T-Bone.
All right, so today we're joined by Dr. Leslie Holmes-Leach. Leslie, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Fantastic. And Dr. Sully Sullivan, who lost $100 to me in golf today.
But I also won $90 from someone else. So it was $110. So it was a net $10 to me. So I'm fine with it.
But anyway, we're here to deal with Dr. Leslie Holmes-Leach today, who is from Rocky Top, Tennessee.
Correct.
When you said that, by the way, I thought you were joking.
I know. Most people do.
Like, that's not even real.
It is real.
It's in a beautiful place.
It is very beautiful.
Have you been?
Yes.
No, you haven't.
Yes, oh my gosh.
Tennessee, East Tennessee, so it's very representative of East Tennessee.
So is it almost like the Tri-Cities area?
No, I went to hygiene school in Johnson City at ETSU.
East Tennessee State University?
Mm-hmm, that's the Tri-Cities.
So you were a hygienist before?
For 10 years.
For 10 years? Wow. Did you always want to be a dentist?
Yes.
No
so
way.
Why didn't you just go straight into dental school?
Because I was not ready.
when you say you weren't ready, what does that mean?
Well, I was 17 when I went to college.
Wow.
And I took chemistry. And I took chemistry again. And I was like, wait a minute, you know. And I didn't even know, like, what my schedule was. I was just there floating.
In college.
I wasn't directed or focused or quite ready to put into it what you need to put into it. And so I thought, well, I love, like, you know, healthcare and I like dentistry, but
I love me some teeth.
I do. And I thought, well, I want to be in medicine, but I don't want people to be dying because I'm very sensitive. So I thought, well, I can be a hygienist. So I went to hygiene school. And I was hygienist.
So did you get to a point where you were like, I mean, because 10 years is a long time.
Well, my first job, I was like, I'm going to go back to dental school.
Like, why?
You know, I just went on. Because, I mean, you have that kind of in your head already, and then you're watching the dentist. And
did you like the dentist you worked for?
Initially. I mean, that was my first job, so, you know. But then you start seeing things, and you know what you know, and you know that you can know that, and you know what they don't know all of a sudden. And
so you expound on that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
Well, I want to treat people well, and I really have a heart for people.
And were you in Rocky Top?
No, in Knoxville.
Knoxville.
And I didn't like what I saw. In some places, now some dentists that I worked for were great, and I loved how they treated
me. How many places did you work for in 10 years?
Well, I lived in Tennessee, Knoxville, and I lived in Mississippi, in Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, wow. Okay.
I lived in South Korea for a year.
No way.
Did you do dentistry there?
I did on a military base.
On a military base, okay. That doesn't count.
And, well, I was kind of like...
Why doesn't that count?
That
totally counts.
Because
in South Korea, that counts.
You were on a military base?
No,
you were on the U.S.
land.
Who were you employed by?
They just kind of like let me work there, and I saw the families that worked on the base that were Korean families.
Do they have more decay or more perio?
Perio, yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, from what I was there a year, so. And then I lived in South Carolina, and then that's when I, you know, applied to USC, got into dental school. So
what made you apply to dental school?
I mean, I was ready for a change, and I knew, I guess I was more mature, and I was ready to put in that work.
Did you have to go back to school a little bit?
I took a couple of, like, I never had physics, so I had to take physics, like, one or two, but I went and retook chemistry so I could do organic.
For, like, the fourth time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was like, this is a breeze. I remember all this now. And I'm actually
You've seen all the questions before.
Did you do well in high school?
I did, yeah. Okay. But, I mean, my high school at that time, where I went, tested probably third worst in the state.
So that's what everybody tells me.
Well, there wasn't much college prep. Like, I took the ACT on a Saturday. I didn't know what it was or what it was for.
Yeah.
So my big question is, how do you, at what point, I mean, to me, being in hygiene that long, it's impressive that you didn't, like, lose hope of the dream.
Well,
you
know, I mean,
do you feel like that's hard to do?
No, it wasn't like a dream. Like, I thought about it every day.
Yeah, but to come back and say, 10 years after doing this as a career, I'm now going to go back to school.
It's when I became a mom. Because when I went back to
school. But isn't that even harder to chase your dream then?
It depends on who you are and your mindset. Because I got pregnant, and I started taking some classes, and I started thinking.
You have to get pregnant to become a mom.
Yes.
Well, not exactly.
Not exactly.
That's true.
You don't have to. But I I started thinking about my daughter and about what I wanted her to become,
right,
and what I haven't done yet. So you want to become like a role model for your kid.
How helpful is
that? Awesome.
Well, I want her to follow her dreams. So
yeah.
Well, how am I going to
tell her to if you don't?
Right. And so I thought, well, all I got to do is at least try. And I'll take the stuff.
And then you're like, when you got in, you're like, damn.
I did.
I got to do this.
4 years
of experience. No, I had a meltdown panic attack because I was like,
that is crazy.
I was like, are you serious?
Where'd you go to undergrad?
Where'd
you go to dental school?
MUSC.
MUSC.
MUSC. That's why you write that shit.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so when I started dental school, my daughter was one and a half. And so we went down, and it was me and her. And we did it, you know, and so it was pretty awesome. And she went with class to me sometimes, or she...
That is crazy.
You know, so how helpful was being a hygienist in dental school?
Not at all.
No.
I mean, it was once the clinical started.
I would say, yeah.
Because the whole mirror thing.
Right.
But
also, you didn't allow you to know what to focus on and what to take serious and not serious.
You know what decay looked like.
Well, an assistant would know more.
You
know, a hygienist works independently completely, and they just kind of can explain procedures.
That's unfortunate, yeah.
You know, and I felt like, you know, the teeth numbers and the first little dental, you know, orientation class, fine. But when the clinical started was when I was in my comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know,
well, are you hard on your hygienists?
No. Like, I'm very appreciative of them because...
Dude, it's a hard job to scrape teeth.
It's better of how our practices are successful or not. Because sometimes we just pop in and out, and they are the ones that feed us the information. They're the ones that are establishing that relationship. They're with them for an hour, maybe 40 minutes. So they're really the ones that are keeping our practices
together. So then why do more dentists not value their hygienists and think of them as profi mills? And by that, and I apologize if I step on your toes here a little bit, but
you've
like...
You've got to step on your toes.
Very likely. But my point in that is...
I know how to kick, so...
That's good.
No, but my point in that is most dentists look at their hygienists as like profi mills, and they start doing assisted hygiene, and they want the hygienist to only scrape teeth and have an assistant come in and do...
assisted hygiene can work if everybody's happy.
But it doesn't work for the... It can work. But my point in that is assisted hygiene doesn't work in a practice that's trying to do more comprehensive, complete care dentistry.
So, I think what he's getting at is, what would you say you value the most that your hygienists do for you?
Because you're on both sides of it now.
The interpersonal relationships, that there's so many patients that come in. Like, we have three hygienists, and they usually want to see the same one, and it's like when you go get your haircut.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not to substitute healthcare for a haircut.
No, it is.
But... I mean, I've moved a few times, but I'll still drive sometimes an hour to go to the same person just because I'm like, oh, what's going to happen?
It's a relationship.
Sometimes
it's a fear.
Hurt.
Yeah.
Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they feel more clean. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they feel more comfortable.
Well, it's also, you know, what I've learned over the years is for a lot of patients, dentistry is a very personal, like, invasive type of thing because,
right.
You know, like you could be missing all your back teeth and you don't want anybody to know.
Right. Or wear denture and nobody knows.
Right. And just, yeah. So you're going to go in and let the one thing that maybe you want people to know, you're going to let your hygienist and your dentist
right.
know. So once you find somebody, you don't want to kind of move. But how do you run your hygiene department?
Well, pretty much hands off as long
okay.
as it's going well. And
so define
really,
going well.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means if there's not someone on the schedule, that everybody's trying to fill the schedule.
Okay.
They're on commission.
Okay.
When I was a hygienist, I always worked on commission. Not because it's a car lot, but because it gives everybody ownership. And it gives everybody...
What do you think about that? Commission. Obviously, you like it. What do you like about it?
It gives them another sense of the business other than just, I'm going to go in and do my time. Mm-hmm.
They are on commission based off their production?
Mm-hmm.
So the more profies they do, the more they make?
Does that bother you that their focus then becomes more on their production than on your production?
It hasn't. And there's also an office-wide bonus.
Okay.
So let me give you my take on commissions. I'm not trying to change your mind, okay? Because you have something that's worth it.
I'm a total commission, so I'm all in.
No, but there's what you're doing...
It depends on the people.
No, but you're doing, and let's come back to that later. So what you're doing is very different than what she's doing.
Right.
Because you're doing... Everybody in your office is paid a commission of overall office production.
Correct.
Whereas her hygienist, correct me if I'm wrong, their individual production. So one crown is your hygienist's entire day. Right, so... And I don't know, maybe your hygienists are different from me,
right.
But if I was paid based on what I did, I would do profies and scalings all day long
right.
and tell you to bug off when it comes to...
Well, there's also an office-wide.
Yeah, but still, it's better for me to... The more I focus on what I can control,
yeah.
the better I do, correct?
Well, there's also... They don't control the schedule completely.
Okay.
So
Well, usually, part of us do too. You have good people.
But that's the difference.
That helps.
Because I've been on both ends. Like, I've worked places on commission where some of the other hygienists I worked with treated it differently.
Right.
You know, they don't, they work just.
They're hired guns.
Basically. They work hard just as hard on a day when they've already met their max as they do on a day when they don't have as much. They're just hard workers and they're honest and sweet people. So you have to know the people that you're working with. You have to know what you're dealing with and have to keep it under kind of control.
So, but my point in this, okay, and just hear me out on this, okay? Maybe I am trying to change your mind, okay? But that's okay. I don't want you to change your mind. Is so my hygienists are so involved in what I do and what our overall practice does that I'm convinced, and maybe it's my own issue, that if I put my hygienists on a commission structure where they were commissioned based on the profies and scalings they did, that they would pay less attention to the sleep, the ortho, and all those things that they get night guards and things that they don't get credit for because they only get credit for the profies and the scalings and x-rays and stuff like that.
Well, there's a office law bonus structure that's in place that's based on collections.
Okay.
Which,
so how do you do that? Just if you don't mind explaining to me.
There's a goal per day of collections.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then how many days we work in that month is equals, a certain number.
Okay.
And then there's a percentage of that that's over within a range. That they
so
all,
kind of your big bam
so
number.
So everybody in the office, however many days they work, because it's fair. So people
and then
work.
They split it.
It's
equally.
Like a piece of the pie.
Sure.
How many days they work and how much is there.
Mm-hmm.
A certain percentage of it. So that really is an incentive. And they really, honestly, it's the only dentist office in that area, and they want the office to be successful just in itself. And they take pride in the office, and so I think that that also helps move it along.
Do you think it's hard to be a female owner and work with a lot of females?
Not yet.
Because I hear this all the time.
Let
like,
me
we,
tell you this,
because,
man.
No, because
no,
we were recently.
I graduated hygiene school in 98.
Okay.
I was told by my professors, oh, don't work for a woman dentist.
To a woman? You get fired
because
for saying that today.
Because yeah.
Well, you mean, get free tuition.
They were women.
Okay.
They were
oh,
women
I got
too.
You.
And they were just like, oh, don't work because they're hard. It's hard. It just depends on the, like, I feel like it's going well. You know, I don't know. I'm not a man, so I don't know the difference. But I think I've worked for a lot of people.
You're definitely not a man, just so you know.
I've worked for a lot of men dentists, and some have been good, some have been not so good.
Right.
And there's an element there of disconnect that can be a good thing, especially for the dentist.
But I think
they don't have to engage because they can.
But as men, we can say and do things and get away with things that you probably,
I
if
think
you
that's
did.
A change in a little bit.
Maybe it is. Or maybe it's your personality.
Yeah.
But there are things that I can probably do that if a female owner or boss said that to the team, they'd be like, oh, she's such a this.
Right. Well, I think that I've established trust and respect because a big part of it is mutual respect. And a big part of it is them knowing that I value them.
All right, so now we talk about the practice a little bit.
I want to piggyback on that a little bit.
Because I do value.
Because
you can't run your practice without your people that work there.
Are you dentist, office manager, and business owner, or do you have someone that kind of helps mitigate some roles?
But she.
What do you mean by quote office manager?
Because I'm not scared to go in head first to any situation or any problem or handle anything that I can. But as you know, things get busy.
So you think
she picks up the slack.
So what is her role totally?
Anything and everything.
Okay.
You know why most dentists hire office managers? I know you're not this way, Dr. Leach, but most dentists hire office managers to fire people because they don't have the guts to do it.
I get that.
I think it's the busy factor, too. And if you're a very busy...
Well, that was what I was interested in because she's obviously not afraid to, like, deal with controversy with her team by any means.
And you're still a mother, correct?
Yeah.
So, like your kids are at home.
But so she's a 12-year-old daughter.
So she's obviously... Or, is she or he? I don't know whatever the office manager is, but she's obviously helping you do a lot of that role. How much has that helped you get some of it off your plate to a degree?
But what it's good, but what I've tried to do that really everybody likes is I find a certain task and think, oh my gosh, I can't do this thing right now for the next week or two. I might pick somebody in the office completely.
So anybody?
Well, I might be thinking, well, she might not feel as important or as valued. So I go find her and say, I need you to do
that's
this.
That's awesome.
And she takes ownership, and it makes her job satisfaction go up. And I might find something, I'll say, well, this is something that you can handle. It'll be really great if you can do this. And it doesn't put everything on one person.
How many practices do you think need an office manager?
What I've noticed, I mean, the label, if it's a group of women, the label itself can make everybody else feel not as important.
That's true.
because there is, like, if you have two or three people work up front, if there's one person, that, especially if it's all women, because I'm a woman, I understand that, they'll feel like, well, I'm here every day, she's here 3 days a week. I do all kinds of things. I can do what she does. Why am I not able? Why am I not giving this or that? So, but there needs to be one person to make sure that everything is done.
You know what she, the point she makes, though, that I think where we drop the ball on a lot of times, or most owner dentists, is that I think we put so much emphasis on, like, that they want money, that they want...
And that's not all that people want at all.
Exactly. And I think
not
that's,
always.
I think that's what she's doing really well. Yeah. She's saying she knows her team and she knows what motivates them, and she's able to, like, well, like defining ownership. But most dentists would be like, well, I'm just going to try to throw them more money at them to fix the problem. She knows that, like, that's not the case.
The point in this is she knows because why you sit down and talk to them.
Mainly because I was an employee for 10 years.
Yeah, that's a super valid point. Yeah.
Right. But you also sit down and talk to your people and you get to know them and you try to understand what because everybody in our office has a different hot point.
But I was also an associate for 5 years. So now the roles are reversed. I'm an associate that's 63 years old that's out of the practice for 40 years. He handed it all over to me.
Yeah.
He's hands off completely. And that never happens. Like, I can't imagine doing that with that except for 20 years and just giving it completely over.
Oh, when you wrote the check, he was very happy, I'm sure.
But, I mean, he's there 2 days a week and he's just hands off.
Let's talk about the practice a little bit.
So also to take in consideration him.
And sure.
He needs to feel valued. He's been the boss for 4 years. So I think about his position. It's
maybe you're just nice.
Well, but there's...
Maybe everybody should be nice.
Maybe,
it's a valid point, though. Ooh. She makes a really valid point that maybe at some point we should...
About to do it.
Yeah.
And put yourself in their shoes.
Amen. I mean, that's the truth. At some point, like, what you're saying and doing is really by giving your team that kind of respect, they're willing to run through walls for you. And that's a pretty crazy thing that I think sometimes we as owners or dentists a lot of times, especially being males, is we try to just throw more incentives and try to just buy them, essentially. And really what they want is, you know, loyalty, trust. And
people want belong, a sense of belonging,
yeah,
too.
It's about leadership.
That's a great point.
Leadership isn't dominating, and it's not throwing money or anything like that.
That's a great point.
Where'd you learn leadership from? You know, the reason
I've experienced.
But the reason I ask this
is. I've watched 74 leaders, I've watched 70 leaders.
But the reason I ask is because one of the most common questions I get from young practice owners is, how do I become a leader? And I don't know how to answer that question. I think it's almost you develop and become a leader over time and by literally putting yourself in other people's shoes.
Well, you know, it's our nature to lack one of control.
Yeah.
Even if it's that teeth.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you have to let go of the control, but it's a lot of it's about control. And you have to trust people, and that's a big part of it. And they feel trusted, so they trust you. And it's just, but so a lot of it's about control, and a lot of it is about not looking at yourself and being selfish, but thinking about what you would want.
Let's turn the table to the practice.
Okay.
Describe.
That was good, though. That was good.
No, I'm not saying it wasn't.
No, I'm digging it, though.
But I want, because I have a very specific agenda here, okay? So describe Rocky Top to me.
Okay, Rocky Top originally was a coal mining town.
Okay.
So it used to be called Coal Creek a long time ago. And it's in the mountains. It's about 45 minutes north of Oxville toward Lexington.
Population of?
I don't know.
5,000, 10,000, 20,000. How many stoplights you got?
Math is not my subject.
How many stoplights you got?
Maybe two.
You got a Sonic? McDonald's?
Yes, Sonic, McDonald's, Cracker Barrel.
Walmart?
No, they have a Wiggles.
How far do you have to go to get a Walmart?
20 minutes.
So you're probably a town of 15,000.
I'm not.
That'd be my guess. 10 to 15,000.
So the coal mining town.
Two stoplights.
You know, it was there. And it was just, you know, the mountains, coal mining.
How many dentists are there?
Me and then the dentist that I. Myself,
just your employee.
Yeah.
Two of you.
So there's one dental office there.
That's you.
That's us.
So you might be a town of 5,000.
Yeah.
That we pull, like, our patients are just from there.
You know, if we talk to Sully's friends, okay, because how old are you? 28?
29,
whatever. You act like you're 12, okay?
All right. You're so older.
Okay. So if we ask Sully's friends, I would bet 1 out of 100 would say that they would be willing to go practice in a town like Rocky Top.
They're missing out, obviously.
But when you say when they're missing out, I grew up.
It's not your hobbies, because I grew up on the lake.
Okay.
Love the lake. Well, there's Norris Lake, which the people come from all over the country just to spend their summers there, especially that they've been infiltrated by people from Ohio. Mm-hmm. Come there just for the summer. So it's a beautiful place, but like I said, it was a coal mining town. Then back when, I think it was Roosevelt developed like the Conservation Corps to get people jobs, the CCC built a dam in Norris that's called Norris Dam. Well, they flooded a ton of farmland and they made it like man-made lake. So it's a beautiful crystal clear lake. It's like right there. So then they renamed the town Lake City. So it was Coal Creek, then it was Lake City forever.
Okay.
Well, 2-3 years ago, they're trying to bring tourism to the area. They renamed it Rocky Top.
Here's what I want to do. I want to give you all the myths that people tell me, okay? Okay, because listen, I grew up in a very small town, okay? A little bit bigger, this sounds a little bit bigger and more normal than Rocky Top, okay?
Right.
No offense, okay? But it wasn't as beautiful as Rocky Top, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
But,
way not cool.
And I talked to, and this is my pet, I'm gonna do my one soapbox and I'll be done, okay?
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with you necessarily, but I get so irate when dentists tell me that they're burdened by their debt. Not that the debt isn't real, but then they say, I only want to work in Nashville, or I only want to work in Knoxville, or I only want to work in Raleigh or Charlotte. I'm like, dude, if you just literally go 45 minutes to an hour outside of this city, you will make more money than you know what to do with. Half the time, some of these cities will help you pay off your student loans, but their mindset, and they're just so stuck and not willing to open their mind to this lifestyle thing. So, I don't want to live in a small town because I don't get to do the type of dentistry I want to do.
Fact or fiction? Yeah,
fact
or fiction.
Fiction.
I mean, you can do whatever kind of dentistry.
So tell me, what kind of dentistry do you do?
I do a little bit of everything.
So what is everything?
There's not anybody else.
So do you get to place implants?
That's why I'm here. Actually, yeah, I've been placing implants for... I did it in my residency in 2012. I've been placing for 7 years.
Okay. So people in Rocky Top, town of God knows what, which nobody knows, place implants.
Well, yeah. I
mean, so, well, yeah. Okay, what do you charge for?
That's part of why that I wanted to get some of the equipment that I needed when I took that practice over, is because I want them to have the same kind of things offered to them without having to drive an hour or 2 hours. You know, some things I still refer out because I'm not going to try to do
I don't want to be in a small rural town because people can't afford dentistry.
That's a bunch of crap, because people have money and they sit on it and they take care of it. And what I've seen, because I did practice in a little bit of a bigger city, is that they're more likely to come in, trust what you say, and pay their bills ahead of time because they don't want to owe anybody.
I don't want to...
How much is it insurance-driven versus not insurance?
It's a lot of insurance, and that's my choice because of the area. I feel like that it takes care of the people. They want to be able to take advantage of their insurance benefits, and so I definitely want that to be an option.
I don't want to live in a small town or work in a small town because the fees are lower.
I mean, our fees are comparable to anybody.
What do you charge for an implant?
Depends.
Oh, don't get me on the
soapbox. What's your typical implant cost?
It depends.
All right, Dr. Leslie.
Give me a bar rate.
Pass.
A range. A pass?
Pass. What is this, categories?
Right now.
No.
My point is, I don't think it's that much different. I mean, I live in like one of those. I live in Williamson, one of the most wealthy counties in Tennessee.
There's, if their other option is way higher, but sometimes they have other options. So,
how much is a crown?
$1,200.
Pass. $1,200? Dude, I don't charge that.
That's my point. Is
because you're driven down by a competitor.
I understand that, okay? But my point is, for people like him, not him particularly, but they say, I'm like, dude, you charge more.
I hope you do implants for $1,000 or something. Because at the end of the day, you know that like you can do just as good a treatment.
Well, that's
and
minimum.
Still make money.
That would be the
and,
minimum, but I'm not going to put the people that I refer to under the best either. So
right.
There's a, I have a respectful relationship with my little surgeons and with the periodontists and the people that I refer to. So,
are they in town or are they far away?
40 minutes.
But that is ultimately our point, is that like this whole myth that you only like, you can't charge what you charge and that things are different. It's not.
The problem,
I mean, the reality
is someone's trying to find a job only based on how much money they can make, they're never going to be happy.
Look, I think we all live in a small town. At the end of the day, we all have 4 or 5 friends that we spend 80% of our time with. And you can have those 4 or 5 friends in Rocky Top or Brentwood or Raleigh or wherever it is. It doesn't matter, okay? And to me, if you know, I get it if you're 3 hours outside of civilization. That's one thing.
Yeah.
But when you're 40 minutes from civilization...
Or really, downtown Oxford, I could be there in 25 minutes.
You know, 30 minutes from civilization...
grabbing.
All right, so
are y'all using? I mean, so the next question then becomes is like, what technology are you using? Yeah. Do you need technology in a small town?
I mean, I wouldn't want it anywhere.
Your patients don't expect it, or expect it, or what?
They're thrilled. I mean, I don't know.
What technology have you put into your practice?
So I got, you know, the XG.
Beam. Okay, so you have a cone beam.
And then my big thing was I went to like the CEREC class just to kind of, because I looked at all the different, I wanted to establish like a digital scan. So I had all the different people come in with their.
So you looked at all of them.
Yeah, like,
why did you choose CEREC?
Well, here's why. Okay, so I had, what's the one, like the.
Trio C4D.
Okay, so I had a Trios lady come in, and we all had all these systems failed, and we tried it on each other, and I had the other one come in, the other one. And I was like, okay, and I feel like it's a big decision.
It is. It's a lot of money.
Like, well, I know it's going that way. Like, you need a scan. Like, it's great, and I'm excited about it, mainly because, like, we're the dental nurse, and we want to do what's new and upcoming. I don't want to take impressions if I don't have to. Like, it's like dinosaur. So I wanted to pick the right one, but then I was like, well, I've been placing implants, and they don't have a CT here, and I've been planning on my, like, the CT, like, the implant placement, so I can't place implants without a CT. I had a nice new pan, a digital electrode, everything was, like, up to date to that point, and I'm like, well, which thing do I do first?
And I'm doing both at the same time.
Well, I'm very conservative, like, in everything, so I was just like, well, I can't do everything. I'm like, well, let's just do one thing at a time, especially with the staff and everything being new. Maybe a new.
Something.
So I was like, okay, so I went to the CEREC class just to try the OmniKingdom. So I tried it, and we made, like, the Celdra crayon in, like, 15 minutes. And I was like, I wasn't planning on even doing that.
You're like, that's kind of cool.
Wow, that's great. And then I'm like, well, I want to do implant.
So let me ask you this. I'm sorry to interrupt. When you said, wow, that's great, did you say, wow, that's great because, oh, that made you feel good?
No,
or you said, wow, that's great because my patient's going to love it?
Just everything. Like, I felt like it was easy for me to implement. It'd be easy for the assistants to implement because they do most of it.
Yeah. And you think your patients would like it?
Well, yeah, because if they are an hour or an hour and a half away and a temporary comes off, or they have to drive back in a month, sometimes our labs take a month because we don't have a bunch of labs.
Did you guys have Pony Express?
No, I mean, I use a lab actually at Virginia Beach for a lot of stuff, right. And Bright Cosmetics stuff, they still take a month. Yeah. Like, FedEx, UPS comes in there every day, it's like the same. But I was like, okay, and so then at the very end of the class, they showed the video, it's probably a hook, line, and sinker, but it was like how you can integrate your CT into your CEREC, it's, you know, print a guide, mail it, which I'll be printing it, and do your surgery, you know, from the crown first, because that, of all the years I've been around industry since 1996, big problem, not against oral surgeons, because they've just been putting where
they place them crooked.
Well, not always, but the thing is, like, if the crown's not planned first, then how do you really know? So we planned the crown first, the whole video, and I was like, oh, I want to do all
that. Makes a lot of sense.
Because that's the way you can implement it all together. Mm-hmm. And so that's it.
So how did it feel signing a note or writing a check for $250,000?
Not much different after private practice for whatever I bought.
So why do you think other why do you think other dentists hesitate to spend money on technology?
Because they're stingy, probably. Or they're not stingy, but they're like used. I think that most of us, maybe not all, are conservative.
But what do you think of cone beam so far? What are your expectations with cone beam?
That's why I'm here for this class, because I've been kind of, I took some and I've reviewed some, but I've been wanting to really feel comfortable before I order my surgical drill kits and start placing it in. And so I haven't used it that much, but I know, like, I've used other types of software and other cone beams. So it's like, when we play them in the residency, you have to pay them to place them in the hands. So now it's like it should be a standard of care. I don't think anybody should be placing them without a cone beam.
You know, people get angry when you say things like that.
Just because I've done it, and then I had an opportunity to do it without it. And you know what you don't know.
What's been the hardest part about implementing technology? Like, cone beam and CEREC. Like, there has to be hiccups. Like, it's not all sunshine and roses.
You're drinking your coffee, and you're not relaxed.
So it's harder. You have to work a little harder?
No, it's just change is hard.
Like, how do you deal with it? Because that probably is a good question itself, is how do you deal with change your team? Like, how do you motivate your team?
It off, man.
Well, apparently.
Yeah. Well, I've had a lot of change in my life, and I guess you just scroll. Like, you're not promised tomorrow. So, like, we're going to get stressed today and not enjoy the day and enjoy everything that I've had. Like, we're blessed and gifted to be able to practice dentistry and to help people and to do what we love to do. Like, when it might not be there in a week. surgery. We're not promised anything, so why are you going to stress and worry about anything each day? Physically, sure. Say, I mean, I do sometimes, but it's like you have to keep it in perspective. Like, this is our fun. This is our game. Mm-hmm. This is our happy. This is what we love to do. It works.
You're a good leader. I bet I can see where your team would feed off
your
energy.
Well, I need an associate coming up.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Is your old guy retiring?
Well, no, he's there under contract for 2 years. But, he, I mean, he's so thrilled with all of it. Like, I worried about his
thinking. How's he doing with technology?
Well, I thought, well, I told him when I got back, and I said, I've got the stuff, all of it. And I was like, but you don't have to use any of it. If you don't want to. You don't have to use any of it. And I told the team, it was like, if you don't want to use it, I'll just do the scans, and I'll make the prints, and you don't have to do any of it. But they saw me doing it. And enjoying it, and they all went.
They all want to grow.
So he was like, oh, well, I've been wanting to get it, but I just didn't know I get to use it, and I didn't have to buy it.
Do you find that you're like you're acting like a lab now? Like, are you doing a lot of this work, or is your team taking ownership?
They're doing.
So they're doing all the work.
They're like a unicorn. You're like a unicorn. You're happy. You love what you do.
She's a good leader. That's what I've. I think more than anything, she's a good leader.
We're created for this. You know.
What would you tell somebody who's unhappy with dentistry?
They shouldn't have been dentists.
No, that's not the wrong answer. That's not what I'm looking for.
It's not dentistry, it's with themselves.
How could they...
I mean, they're not...
What if they're struggling in their practice?
I mean, with what? Like, you know,
people are struggling.
But with what aspect?
Financially, money, team. You know, the number one thing I ask in every program I do and everywhere I go, what keeps you up at night in your practice? And without question, over 50% say the team members.
They're focused on the wrong things. Like, it has to be in hierarchy. There has to be spiritual, family. The work is not up here.
Sure.
You know, and if you're not happy, everything that we are when we come to work trickles down. So if you're not making people happy, whether it's your patients or your staff or whoever, then you're not going to be happy. Like, it all comes back up. You know, I think it all starts with yourself, and, like, it's all eternal, you know?
Here's what I'll say. You built a practice around you. And clear to me.
About the patients and the stuff.
No, but it's about what you like and what you want and what you believe. And you believe in great things, right? So
I'm impressed.
That's my big thing for people is build a practice around what you want and where you want to practice.
And that's for happiness. Yeah. You know, if people are unhappy, then they're just not doing what they want to do, probably.
That's right.
That's awesome.
They get on that wheel, that hamster wheel, and then they kick it off.
So if I'm ever visiting Rocky Top, am I allowed to come visit?
Yes.
Will I get a shirt, T-shirt?
I'm going to mail you one.
I want a second one.
You have to wear it to there.
Just so you know, my kids wear these T-shirts.
Okay.
So here's what you got to mail. You got to mail me three smalls and a 2X.
Okay. What about your wife?
She doesn't wear T-shirts.
Very nice clothes.
Okay. No T-shirts. I'm not saying she doesn't wear T-shirts. She doesn't wear T-shirts.
I don't know what that's all about.
She doesn't wear T-shirts. I'm just saying.
This is good.
Everybody loves a T-shirt.
Yeah. I just want it for my kids.
Okay.
They wear the Good Berry shirt all the time.
Very small.
They don't get a lot of clothes.
Very
so
small.
Good to
get yes. One, two, okay. You got it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It was awesome. Thanks, Sully.
Work smarter, not harder.
Thanks so much for listening to T-Bone Speaks with Dr. Tarun Agarwal. Remember to keep striving for excellence, and we'll catch you on the next episode.